Hi, this is Dan McHugh.
And Bill Deal told me to give you a call because I'm writing that book on WNEW.
Oh, okay.
And he said that you have great memory.
Now, I don't know, my whole acting so-called career, whatever you want to call it, on the air, just seemed to happen. I don't know how it happened, but it happened, and I ended up on NEW FM when it first started. It's pretty exciting.
How did you go from TV to radio?
Well, I did the TV in Philadelphia, introducing the old movies from Universal Studios, Frankenstein and Dracula and the Wolfman, and I guess it was 1959, was it, maybe, in 60?
Right,
59,
right.
I think, in Philadelphia year. And it created such a sensation there now in Philadelphia, which surprised me. So nobody told me what to do, and I had never seen those movies when I was a kid. I wasn't allowed to see them. So I saw them on, like everybody else saw, right on a little small screen TV.
Oh, okay.
And it was a great experience for me. And so we started out and kind of kidding the storyline of the movies. You know, what went wrong in the experimental area and so on and so on. It caught on very well. And then one of the men who used to come up with ideas based on the films as they came on week after week, it was all live TV, you know?
Right.
And there was no tape. So it was late at night after the late news. And each week was a new show. That's the way it was. And like I say, I never saw those movies when I was a child. I wasn't allowed to. And then here I was no longer a child. I'd been in the Army in World War II. So I wasn't in the shooting part of it at all.
Right.
I was behind the lines. And I never really figured out. I was just talking to a friend of mine. We had lunch. I said, you know, when I was in World War II, we didn't do anything. We were in supply behind the lines. And I think we only had two little minor air raids from the Germans and Italians. And after it was over, I had no idea what I wanted to do or who would hire me to do anything. I certainly didn't want to be in supply. That was not my great forte.
Right.
I'm one of my cousins was in a theater group. He said, why don't you go over there and help him with the scenery? So I did that. That kept me busy. I enjoyed that. And one day a lady who belonged to it, she said, why don't you go over to the television station? They had an open call for people to be in this show called Action in the Afternoon. Do you remember seeing that? It was a cowboy show.
Oh, yeah, I've seen clips of that, yeah.
Yeah, it was called Action in the Afternoon. Every afternoon, it was a soap opera, actually. But it was costumes and horses and things like that. It was supposed to be 1880 in Montana or somewhere. They hired me. When I went out there, they'd already had questionnaires and talked to all these people. About the editor people showed up. And they picked the ones they wanted, and then they threw all the other information away. So when I went over, about 3 weeks after all that, I said, so-and-so said, I should come over here and see if you got any openings here. And I didn't think in terms of acting or anything like that. But they said, oh, yeah, we could use somebody. So they used me as an extra, and I was usually walking up and down the street of this little town, you know, and waving to somebody, no words at all, just to be in the background. So, a very nice lady named Penny Baker. Anyway, she was there in the control room while we were in a dress rehearsal, and I was holding a horse or something for the star who would come by and jump on the horse. And this Lois Penny Baker, she leaned over the director in the control room, and she says, that guy over there holding the horse, why don't you give him something to say? He looks so forlorn. So the guy did. He gave me words to say. And the next thing you know, I was having more words each week. And eventually, it was interesting. I mean, it was early television, you know, black and white, no tape. So it was every afternoon about 3 o'clock till 3:30. And we were opposite Kate Smith had a musical hour at that time of day on some other channel. Lo and behold, we got better ratings than she did, which is something, but they couldn't sell it to some big advertiser. We kept trying, and so finally that girl who said, why don't you give me something to say, it turned out that a few weeks after that, they stopped bringing people down from New York City to do the maid acting roles of that particular week. And by the end of the week, they'd either be married or shot or chased out of town or something. And another couple would come down from New York. But they couldn't get the knack of running in and out of the studio. They built the false front of an old town so you could hitch up your horse in front of this thing, but there was nothing behind the wall. A picture of a town, a store, you know, and a bar room and a jailhouse, that kind of thing. So if you did some talking out there, you'd say, well, I'm going in and drink at the bar. You'd walk in there and close the door behind you. Then you'd run like crazy around in to get into the building where that interior of that particular building was and have your drinking or whatever. After they stopped bringing people down from New York, they started using local people. But that's what I ended up doing, you know. I did that, and it lasted for a year. I'm giving you the whole history here. I hope you're writing this down. At any rate, it ended after 1 year. They never did find a sponsor for the show. One of the men I made friends with, so it turned out that somebody had made a video of one of the shows by putting a camera in front of a TV set and getting a picture off the tube. Well, and the next thing I know, I'm in New York, where they had already been showing these movies late at night and for a whole year before I got there. But it caught on because we had a little different attitude about the films, and we fooled around and kidded around and so on. And once again, we had a huge audience. And halfway through the year, we were talking over the show that we're going to do that evening, and the guy comes in and says, oh, he says, we're not going to do it at night. We're going to do that on Thursday afternoon. I said, well, how are you going to do that? We got something new. He says, oh, what's that? He says, tape. I said, what's that? He says, I'll show you. They took me downstairs and showed me these great big machines and these great big reels of tape. They were 2 inches wide. That was the last time it was live. Everything was on tape.
Wow.
And it was very, very odd to be doing it when you realize nobody was watching except the guys in the control room and the stagehands who were standing around by the camera. But that was the way it happened. It was coming to New York and doing the TV thing for, I guess, 4 years, I forget how long. That was pretty neat because even though people had seen those movies for a year before I got here, I went from one station to another and used different movies. I think it lasted about 4 years. So we did that, and then we did something else. Like a dancing show. Yes, we did that.
I was going to say, didn't you do a dancing show?
Yeah. It was called Disco Team. Disco Team. And all the new music was coming out, you know, the Beatles and the Stones and all that. So I forgot all about my upbringing with the big band music. And I fell in love with all this music. And after that, we did about 3 years of that. It was a chance to... FM started. All this stuff I was living through, with all of these changes.
Right.
Suddenly there's FM radio. Somebody says, you should go over there and... had all this experience with dancing music, you know, that's what they're playing on the air. They will be anyway. So I went over and introduced myself and told the guy I'd been doing all this music, the Stones and the Beatles and Grateful Dead and all those people. He said, well, I'll let you know. And it turned out, I found out afterwards, he went home and asked his son, and he says, do you think Zachary would be good in the radio? And the guy says, yeah, he'd be great. That's how I got on the radio. I couldn't believe it. Suddenly I'm there on a radio station where you picked your own music. You had to schedule it all yourself, and it was live, 4 hours in the air. And then you get out of the chair, and somebody else takes over. A great experience, really.
What was it about the music that you liked so much?
I think that they had more stories. What's the word? I don't know what the word is. They were writing songs about everything, not just about me and you meeting down under the moon somewhere. The topics that people were writing were not what we were used to hearing. As I say, my family, we grew up under big band music and dance music, and there wasn't much different in the way of the music. The dances are all the same pretty much all the time. I love the music, and I do to this day, is what I listen to.
Sure.
So it's been a great, great, wonderful life. I tell people I never had a job. I just had a lot of fun.
Right.
But
right.
When I think about that, I was just in time to go from live TV to tape, to colored tape, you know.
Right.
FM radio, all this stuff happened, and it was like some kind of a miracle to get caught up in it. Wonderful.
What was WADW like back then? What was the radio station like? What were the people like?
Well, it was interesting. They first shared a studio right next to the AM. That was kind of strange. Suddenly we're sharing a little part of the library. But the big library there was for us old 78 records. And most radio stations, the AM radio, they were not playing music that they programmed themselves. The music was all played by how popular the thing was being sold.
Right.
And how long it had been on the list to play mine. You know, it was all out of their hand, really. But they all made names for themselves by little gimmicks that they had, the verbal things that they would use and speak about. Who was the guy that used to say it? But he had to say the thing about the kids would like it, and they should go searching for it in the deep waters of...
Oh, Bury the K.
Bury the K. You got it.
Yeah.
what he used to call that? He was something, and he had a
submarine races.
Yeah, there you go. But that they made names for themselves. They went out and had great disc jockey appearances at dances, and they got good money because they were draw. People went out to see them, and then they'd play music, and people would dance, and they would stay there for an hour, and maybe run off to some other dance. So they were very popular, but the FM thing was totally different. We got all the music. I used to have 20 albums a week sometimes that come in from the companies, RCA and all those people, to my apartment, and I'd listen to them, you know, what was new and what was a follow-up album and all that. And we would, we didn't have a list of things to play. We had a total freedom.
Huh.
And it was astonishing to have that kind of thing. And, of course, FM sounded better, too.
Right.
So slowly, FM took over, and now everything's on satellite. And those guys, like Cousin Brucey, I saw him not long ago, and he thinks he died and went to heaven because he's his own programming, and nobody tells him what to play. And he has no commercials.
Right.
It's astonishing.
Did you used to, I heard a story that you used to throw pencils and stick them in the ceiling?
Yes, sure. we had a lot of fun. Roscoe was there. Remember Roscoe? He was on maybe from 6 till 10, I guess. And then I was on from 10 until 2 in the morning. He liked to do some readings during his programming. And the station wasn't sure that was a good idea, but they didn't stop him. They kept their hands off on it. It was a great thing to be there as the station grew. I guess in the last few years, I don't know how long, though, but the satellite has established itself. A lot of them have moved over there, and they're back in heaven again because they can program their own music.
Now, it made a connection with fans. You had a very special, like Roscoe had a very deep connection with fans. You had a connection with people. Tell me about your relationship with the people, with the listeners.
So I'll tell you what I used to do. I used to go down to the Fillmore I was on from 10 o'clock till 2 in the morning, and I got in my little yellow Volkswagen convertible, drive down to the Fillmore, and some of the groups at 2 o'clock, they were just getting warmed up. They would play till 6 in the morning, you know. And so I was always hanging around there, and I got the people would be lined up outside, and I just walk along, and they'd recognize me from somewhere or other, and we'd stop, talk about the music and so on. It was a great experience, and I guess I self-consciously became a teenager again, sort of. And then I went on to the radio. I had a little article in the New York Times about 2 weeks ago.
And I saw that.
So I get getting a lot of nice letters and cards and telephone calls, like yourself.
Oh, very.
Brings it all back. So
it's
been a wonderful life. It really has.
It really sounds like it. Now, why did you leave NEW? You went to PLJ, right?
Yes. I forget what happened there. PLJ, which was ABC station, right? Yeah.
Right.
They were in competition with NEW, playing, you know, the same new albums and all that came out. And I forget, somebody else with me and somebody decided to go over there because it would be a better situation. They didn't trust ABC to keep on letting you have your own choice of music. The radio stations had programs, and the disc jockeys played the music that they were supposed to, that had been written down for them to play for years.
Right.
And they knew, each station thought that they had the best way of deciding what songs to play. And I think somewhere in there that we got the impression it would be better if we went over there and didn't stay at NEW. I forget what the answer was. Maybe there was a bigger station. I forget.
Well, somebody, you know, had said that with the station, you had a lot of freedom in the beginning, and then as the years went on, people started losing the freedom. Like, it became more, you know, like a formula. It became more, you know, they tried to get more advertising. It became more like a business.
When I went over there, it was totally free, but it didn't last. I think it lasted about a year, and then they told us that they were going to stick with the old-fashioned way of doing things, of repeating things, you know. And there might be some point in this. I just don't know how. I've never really seen any articles about it. That by repetition, they would argue that repetition is okay because people do not sit there and listen to radio all day long. They sit there and listen maybe for an hour or so, and then they got other things to do. So that repetition makes more sense, some kind of repetition anyway.
Now, when you were at NEW, Alison Steele was there, and Jonathan Schwartz as well, right?
Jonathan Schwartz was there too, yeah, and he had a lot of background in the music that WNEW used to play, big band music, because of his father, I think, was involved with that.
Right, his father was a composer.
Yes, there you go. His choice of music was a little different than mine and Roscoe's might be or something. At any rate, I went to ELJ, and a really nice bunch of guys there. I have not listened to satellite radio. Do you have the equipment to do that?
Yes, I've listened to it.
Mm-hmm. Is it pretty neat? It should be good.
It's good,
yeah.
But it's not the same. Like, there was something special about radio in those days when you were on the radio. It was just different. It was more like, and even the stuff that sounds kind of like what you did, it's still a formula. It's like they're copying it. It's not original. Like, when you did it, it was original and it was new, and just
it was amazing. I sometimes used to wonder, gee, what have happened? I should have stayed there, or what should, you know. But the people that are on PLJ were really just great people also, with the desires about being on the radio and so on. I was just surprised to be on the radio in the first and it was a terrific experience. It really was. It's great.
Right. So when you think of the NEW days, I mean, what are some of the cherished memories, the things that were special about being on WNEW? I mean, what things do you look back and make you smile?
Well, somehow they got the idea couple of stations of letting the disc jockeys decide what to play every minute. And that was unheard of. So occasionally we'd go down to the Fillmore and help introduce a group that we'd been playing on the air, maybe even take credit for helping that group become successful. Not all the time, but we always got tickets to go down and be there, and the crowds got to know you, and it was a great experience. And most disc jockeys were older than the listeners. Who was another guy who was? Can't think.
Pete Fortitel, maybe?
No, Pete was in college. Yeah, he became a good friend, though we didn't see each other except once a week. We'd have a meeting, and we'd all come in. Otherwise, we didn't meet unless we happened to follow somebody on the air. He was great, and he died suddenly. He had great plans to go ahead. I guess maybe 4 years ago, he called me on. He had an idea for a show and so on, and he worked on that. But he up and passed away there, I think, last year, didn't he?
Yeah, last year, suddenly.
Yeah. But so, he had that station at Fordham, right?
Fordham, yep, WFUV.
Yeah, I was up there twice, too, with him.
So you said you picked your own records. So do you remember some of the records you played?
Oh, yeah.
Or the groups that you played for the year?
They used to come out and leave records at your door every week, the record companies. They would hope that you'd read them, and then if you found something that was kind of neat, then you might play it and introduce it. Or else it was a follow-up record of the Beatles just came out, you know, and you wanted to get that right away on the air.
Right.
You'd listen to some of that stuff at home before you went in to send out over the air.
Right.
It's a great experience, terrific experience. And some people are still enjoying it. Like I say, these people on the satellite I think last year they picked up about four different disc jockeys and hired them.
Because yep.
Satellite has been successful financially, so. Okay. No commercials.
Yeah. So one more question for you, and it's this. What made WNEW special for everybody? What was so unique about it?
Well, it was new. And, of course, ABC FM, which was something on the numbers, were, well, FM itself was totally new. And they certainly wouldn't have asked Cousin Brucey to plug ABC's FM station because he'd lose
right.
his own audience. And I don't know when it was that he finally got onto FM.
Right.
They gave the power to pick their own music to the disc jockeys. And we were all always anxious to play something that just came out. So if a new Beatles album came out, and you might hear the person ahead of you playing a song or something, you'd play another different song. You have to write it down when you did write a song.
Right.
The person that followed you could scan and see that you didn't play the same music in the next hour. But you would play some songs from the new album, whatever. It was a great, great experience, I'm telling you. Just, you wonder how could it ever happen. I think NEW was a leader in that, giving the disc jockeys the opportunity to actually do something and not just stand there talking into the microphone.
Right, right.
Well, I'm going to have to go now.
Okay.
Is it here? Oh, it's...
Thank you.
Well, thank you, and have a good time.
All right.
See you later.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.